A5, number 9B.
We come to principle, and that divine principle says, I am the principle of what? Says, well, mind and spirit and soul are the nature of the principle of being. It says, so to say, I have now stated the creator as mind. I have stated spirit as that which evolves and develops everything. And I have stated that soul makes everything that is evolved definite, that it has identity, unchangeable identity. Now I have shown you the creative nature of being. That is the principle on which you can build. So principle asks us to take the standpoint of that principle, that is mind, spirit, soul, and says, I'm the principle that is doing what? It's the principle that operates as the outflow or the demonstration of principle, namely of life and truth and love. So principle in the middle of those seven is, so to say, the pivot around which the synonymous term rotate and say, if I take mind, spirit and soul as my principle, then I have found the foundation from which life demonstrates itself easily, a foundation which brings forth the true form and the healthy form of truth and shows the fulfillment of everything in love. So once we have touched the principle and have actually felt that principle is not just a term or a central point, but that the principle is our consciousness of mind, our consciousness of spirit, and our consciousness of soul, that consciousness is now my principle, then that principle begins to demonstrate itself. Then I don't have to demonstrate anything anymore. The principle begins then to live as life and to show itself as the saving truth, in truth which corrects everything and shows that love is the fulfillment of that principle. So principle is the pivot, and that pivot is so fundamental and foundational that it is basic for every interpretation. So I go out from principle and I begin to see that principle is always a principle of its own ideas. Without ideas, there is no necessity for a principle. Principle demands that there is a universe of ideas which are governed, I come to govern, you see, which are governed by that central one principle. So that I see that these ideas which were created by mind and unfolded by spirit and identified by soul are not ideas that are now going out into the universe and lose their relationship with its principle, but they are only actually the demonstration of that one principle and are always kept within the unity of principle and idea. They are not leaving the principle. They are united with that principle. And I get the great sense of principle being the principle of all the united ideas, which means the principle of the universe, because universe means that all ideas are turned into one coherent, consistent, inseparable relationship within a whole. So I feel that this principle is ruling and governing the universe and is demonstrating itself powerfully. You have the spiritual power of demonstration in principle. A principle without its demonstrative power wouldn't be a principle. It would be dead. So principle is seen as that which demonstrates itself, and you get a terrific sense of the self-operative power of principle. That self-operative power of principle, which also proves itself, which is always at work, but also in doing that is interpreting its own universe. So the whole universe must be interpreted from that one principle. But one begins to feel that because this principle is uniting all ideas in one consistent, inseparable whole, that principle must have system. That interrelationship of all the ideas within a whole, because its principle, must have categories, must have system, and must have calculus. So one gets a terrific sense of the science of that principle. That principle is not just a middle pole or a middle center somewhere, but that principle is actually a system of ideas in which these ideas operate harmoniously, everlastingly within categories and within a calculus, within a system. You get really here the scientific elements of the science of being. Namely, system, calculus, categories, interrelationships, and they form the science of being. So principle without the science would not be a principle, but would just be an authority. Would just be a dictatorial authority. But with a system, and with a self-operative system, and a self-operative calculus, principle is represented by science. And so here we get all the sciences and the scientific elements. Also, we can see that in principle, because all ideas are united through definite relationships, that these definite relationships, because there is only one principle, must be harmonious. Harmony. Whenever we build on principle, we have harmony. Whenever we use a system, we have harmony. It's quite interesting when you read that compendium on principle and you compare the definition of harmony with the definition of system, that they nearly read the same. They are nearly the same definition. Because there is only a slight difference between system and harmony. Namely, harmony is, so to say, the soul sense of system. But underlying is actually the same thing, that it is exact relationship and interrelationship in which there is no crisis, no chemicalization, no irritation, nothing like that. And therefore, everybody would like to have harmony. That's something that is in everybody yearning for harmony. If you only would harmony, 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 as if one could establish harmony on another basis than system. It's not possible. Without system, there is no harmony. So that yearning for harmony is not just a soul sense, but the demands really an understanding, a scientific understanding of the interrelationships of all ideas, the blending of ideas, the categorization of ideas, the interrelationship of ideas, that is necessary. Which again would show that religion could not, and never could, bring about harmony, because it had no system to rely on, no divine system to rely on. That only a science can bring harmony, a science that is building on the true ideas and seeing how these ideas operate. All right, I go to life. if principle operates by itself and therefore brings dynamics into being, we can see that the dynamic of principle is life. Life is a living demonstration of the divine principle. Whenever principle operates, that is life. I mean, the inner operation of principle is naturally principle. But what it operates, and therefore every operation is some bringing out something new, is life. We can have no life without relying on the divine principle, which is mind, spirit, soul. So many people would like to demonstrate life eternal by just sticking to the idea that life is eternal. Yeah, that's nice. Life is eternal, so you stick to the idea that life is eternal. But that doesn't give life eternal. It has no power at all. In order to have life eternal, one first has to see what kind of life we mean that is eternal. Because mortal life is not eternal, cannot be made eternal. Material life cannot be made eternal. Physical life cannot be made eternal. Organic life cannot be made eternal. Just not possible. So if we try to demonstrate eternal life, we just first have to see what life is. And life must be mind, and life must be spirit, and life must be soul, and life must be principle, or else we have a false concept of life, and we try to demonstrate a false concept of life as being eternal. Doesn't work. So life says only that is life which is created by mind, not by parents. Life that is mind alone is life. Life that is the divine mind and the creation of the divine mind is life. Life that is spirit and not matter is life. So material life cannot be made eternal. That life which is spiritual is already eternal, and we don't have to make it eternal. And that life which is soul, namely that life which is not in something, perhaps I forgot to stress that tone of soul, that soul is never in something, is always unlimited, unbound, never can be limited into a body, into a time, into a space, into anything. It's always outside of an in. It's unlimited. Therefore, life that is soul is life that is not in the body. That's life as soul. And that life that is not in the body is already immortal, and therefore principle will tell us that this life operates already right now as eternal life. We can't demonstrate eternal life. We can only see that life is eternal, and to see that it ever was, because life is mind and is spirit and is soul and operated by principle. You know, if one knows the synonymous term and are sitting back and just think them out always, you get all the answers you have asked for. I nearly said for hundreds of years. That's not quite true. Huh? But for all your life, you have asked thousands of questions. Every one you can answer all by yourself, just by weighing it against the other synonymous terms, just as I have done now with life. If you first weigh the term life and say, what is life? It is mind. All right, what is mind? It is spirit. Now, what is spirit? And you clarify first your term, what is life, then you will never try to demonstrate eternal life. Never. But then you accept that life is eternal, that life is. Now, what is life eternal? It means that what mind, spirit, and soul, as our principle has presented, is in the state of isness. That's life. Huh? See, you give to the preceding synonymous term the value of isness. Then you have life. So all what we have been building up took principle, life comes out and says, now look at it. Look at those four and see that they are. They exist. Life is expressed as existence. Life is expressed as is, isness. Therefore, see that what you have been building up is eternal. Doesn't have a beginning and an end. Is eternal. Is therefore self-sustaining. Life is self-sustaining, self-maintaining, self-providing. It is what it is. Just always think about life. It is what it is. It is what it is. What it is. Mind, spirit, soul, principle. So life, again, cannot stand by itself without the other synonymous term. See, can you see that? You see, that life per se, if we would have no other synonymous terms, we wouldn't know what life is. When we say life is, what is? What is? Huh? What is? The only thing that is mind, spirit, and soul, which form our principle on which to work. So life is just saying to mind and spirit and soul, you are, and you are always, and you have never begun and never ended. You are eternal. Can you see that this, every further synonymous term turns backward to where one has come from and says something new to that? So it says, you are the existence, you are the eternality, you are the nowness, the isness, the everlastingness, the newness. You are always new, you are always what you are permanent, you are continually. Life is everlasting, indestructible, therefore, because it is, it's indestructible, irrepressible, irrevocable. You can't make it otherwise, it is what it is. Finished. And so gives a tremendous sense of that one life. The consistency of that one life. The self-existence, self-preservation of life. And actually one can see that from the human standpoint, if one sticks to that and has that sense, that humanly, life has the ability to lift us out of a mortal sense of life. That's why in life we have a sense of ascension, exaltation, but that's only from the human sense of it. That it gives us a sense we live above mortal life, above mortal strife, above the physical. All that we are on an exalted state, that we suddenly begin to feel that the mortal sense of life doesn't touch us anymore, that the mortal sense of life isn't life at all, that this is just a misconception and a false terminology, that life in matter isn't life at all, that life in spirit, life in 70 years isn't life at all. And this lifts us right above the earthbound concept of a human, mortal, earthly life, and you feel free like in the fifth day of creation, like a bird that flies above the earth, and you feel you are no more earthbound. The weight of the earth falls down. And so in that fifth synonymous term, we experience that sense which is so important in the Bible and in the textbook when life is depicted, that we lay down a mortal concept of life. That laying down, that's from the human standpoint, that it demands to lay down the human concept of life. And that's usually the crux. We would like to eternalize the human sense of life, to eternalize the family sense of life, the business sense of life. Most businessmen would like to take their factory with them to the hunting grounds. They don't like to lose their money. They don't like to lose their family, to leave the family back. What is all the agony of somebody dying? He doesn't want to leave the false sense of life. if one would have a true sense of life and culture it already right now, here and now, and see that life is mind and life is spirit and life is soul and life is principle, we would have no fear of death, we would have no struggle of death, we would not be worrying about death, we would not be sorry about making that transition, we would not do anything because we knew this is not life that happens here on earth. That's a false concept. And so life asks us to drop the false concept of life. That was Jesus' big contribution to our civilization, to show that material life is not life, that life is something very different than a human sense of life, a corporeal sense of life, a 70, 80 year sense of life, that there is something much bigger, namely that the only thing that can live and does exist is principle operating. That's the only life there is. No matter if we like it or don't like it, it's still true. And we better acquaint ourselves as quickly and as early as possible with it and not push it off until we have to meet that claim of the transition where we have to drop. We are forced to drop because love wants us to drop the false sense of life. Yes. Then we come to truth. We still have some time. And we can see in truth that truth adds now to life just another aspect and says, you know, what you have been thinking up to now and contemplating up to now through the first five synonymous terms is really that are really the facts of being. They are true. All the other things is not true. We come to the actuality of the first five synonymous terms. You take the first five synonymous terms and say in the sixth, that's now the actual truth. That truth is a state that cannot be gainsaid, that cannot be falsified, that cannot be gainsaid, is that the right expression? You cannot wipe it away, You cannot disprove it. Truth is that sense that which is in life is so much isness that it cannot be disproved. That's truth. Then it is what it is, it has an actuality, and this actuality of truth has a wonderful inward nature. The inward nature of truth is that it says that which is true claims itself as truth against every resistance, against every other opinion, against every other proposition, against every other vision, against every other comprehension, against every truth actually claims itself to be what it is, and you can't wipe it away. Cannot be wiped away. Cannot be destroyed. It has within itself the affirmative nature of life. The moment we can see the first five synonymous terms in its affirmative nature, affirming themselves as what they are, and see that they always remain what they are, and nothing can disprove them. I wish I had a wonderful vocabulary in English to show that, because it's not so easy to depict truth. Then we would see, that which is factual in being, which is a fact in being, that fact remains that fact through high and hell water, through hell and high water. It is truth, and any lie can be talked about it. Any lie can be said about it. Any erroneous view can be voiced about it. Any misrepresentation can be stated about it. It just doesn't matter. Truth is that aspect of being which says that which is factual remains factual and will remain factual and pulls itself through to be factual and will prove itself to be factual, and you can't change anything about it. Truth has that inner affirmative nature. That's why truth claims itself, it affirms itself, it testifies for itself, and this shows itself towards the opposite, namely that truth, through its claiming and affirming itself, destroys error. You have all those renderings in the textbook about truth, that truth destroys error, that truth dispels error, that truth annihilates error, that truth removes error, that truth obliterates error, that truth consumes error, that truth swallows up error, that error is swallowed up in truth, that truth conquers error, that truth vanquishes error. Can you hear? All those, the triumphs over error, wipes out error, casts out error, drives out error, that error yields before truth. A whole list of those abilities of truth that say to error, I can wipe you out, you can't wipe me out. I, truth, have within myself the affirmative nature to be what I am and to be factual. Do you see that tone? Huh? Therefore, it shows that truth is, so to say, an invincible, unchangeable standard or measurement that cannot be changed. It is the standard of truth, the ideal of truth. In that ideal of truth, you can see that that ideal is the maximum of excellency. That's the ideal of what it is. Yes. Oh, finito.